Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome to the program today Olin Steinhauer. His new novel, An American Spy, was officially published today. Welcome to the program, Olin.
Well, thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Olin, you're out in California. We were just chatting. You said you're not a native Californian. I understand you're actually from Virginia. Is that from anywhere near Langley, Virginia?
You would think so. But no, it was around Richmond when I was growing up. And at the end of high school, my family started drifting further and further south. They're in Texas now. And I sort of separated and started traveling the world a little bit.
And why were you traveling the world? Is that a question you're allowed to answer?
Well, you know, I would, but I might have to. No, it was really just interest, just personal interest. When I was 19, I went on an exchange to Zagreb, Croatia. It was Yugoslavia at the time. And that was the year 89 when the wall came down. And it was also the same year I decided that I wanted to become a writer. And so it was a pretty monumental thing. It was all sort of tied into where I was, feeling of freedom, being off in a strange country. And the exoticism sort of stuck with me. And from then on, I was sort of obsessed with traveling. And it might have come to its conclusion now. It's after 10 years of living in Hungary, I find myself starting to pine for America. And so now we're giving it a try in California.
Your new novel, An American Spy, is set in a number of locations because these spies seem to like to travel around. I don't know if it's just because they're trying to lose the spies that are chasing them, but it's really all over the world. But a lot of it is in China. And I read the previous book in this series, The Nearest Exit. I think you wrote that while you were still living in Budapest.
Yes.
And so reading this, I understood a lot of the backstory. I have not read The Tourist. Do readers need to go back and read those books first? What's your thought?
Well, I've written each of these books to try to make them self-contained. I've always tried to do that. But how successful you are as an author is up to other people to decide. One of the things I've seen from early reactions to the book is that you can understand everything just fine without reading anything beforehand. But what I do is I also, while I'm telling you what happened in the previous books, I don't want to bore the people who have already read them. So I'm weaving in new information and new insights onto the earlier stories. So reviewers will say, well, you don't need to read the previous ones, but you end up with a much more rich experience if you do read the earlier ones, since you're getting new insights onto these earlier stories. So I suppose that's up to whoever picks it up.
Well, it was certainly helpful for me to have read the previous book, and now I really want to go back and read that other. Now, are there just the three then?
Yes, there are.
Okay.
In the future, there may be more, but right now I'm taking a break from Milo.
You know, I was wondering about that because I was reading the book, and as I got to the end, I thought, okay, is this it? And then we get a glimpse of a folder that's sitting there, and there's a name on it, and it kind of gives us a sense that maybe there's more to come.
Yes. I leave, I think, probably with all of my books, and before this trilogy, and still to call it a trilogy, with, you know, one can't be sure of that. Before that, I had written five novels, all set in Cold War Eastern Europe, and I have this habit of leaving open endings in my books, so that, and partly it's just my way of approaching fiction, the idea that if you write a novel of your life that doesn't end, say, with your death, then the story will go on, and I like to leave readers with that sense that this world is not here just for this book. It continues on, and maybe I'll I will continue telling that story later on. Maybe I won't. But I just like the openness of it and the sense that it ties in with real life that way.
Olin Steinhauer joins us. His new novel is An American Spy, and I love this cover.
It's great, isn't it?
It really is a great cover, and I don't say that about many books.
Well, I think they actually went through. This is the third Milo book, and each time they've sort of tried something a little bit different with the cover. And I, you know, even though I like the previous ones, I think this one, it sort of brings together all the various elements so nicely. And you have this sort of dreamy silhouette of London right there, which is just completely picaresque. It's fantastic. And I don't know exactly who designed it in the shop, but I think I sent my appreciation to my editor, and she must have passed it on.
Well, it's beautifully done. And the really amazing thing to me reading the book was that the title, An American Spy, we spend the majority of the book trying to figure out just who the American spy is, because we think maybe it's Milo, and we're not sure about that. And it's rewarding to read the book and actually figure out who that can be. Tell us about the Department of Tourism.
Well, that started off, this was after I had written these Cold War novels, and I had been living some years in Hungary, and I decided I wanted to write some contemporary spy fiction. And so I wanted to come up with a department, a fictional department, partly because I haven't worked in the CIA. And so to write about a real department would be, I don't know, it would be pretty presumptuous of me. So I ended up coming up with this idea of tourists, because I wanted these agents who move around the world sort of fixing problems, doing little jobs. And I was thinking about their relationship to the places they arrive in. And I thought that realistically, they wouldn't have much connection, much emotional connection to the place that they're in. And they would be like tourists coming in, doing a job and leaving, sort of the way you come in, you see the Acropolis, snap some pictures, and then leave. And I was also comparing that in a way to my life in Hungary, because I've never actually spoken the language beyond some, you know, enough to be polite. And I always felt some kind of regret about that I could live in a place yet not really be part of it because I'm linguistically separated. And so all of that sort of played into this invention of the Department of Tourism. And of course, calling them tourists is a bit of a joke, but it's a joke that seemed to work out pretty well.
And Milo is really the central guy in these. And he's a fascinating person because he comes from a really interesting background. Do you want to talk about his family at all? Do you want to talk about who his father is? Should we give that stuff away?
Well, I think it's all right. I've seen some reviews that give away the fate of various characters. So I think just telling that his father is a Russian spy in very Cold War. His mother was a sort of a Bader Meinhof-style terrorist. And I started working that sort of thing in partly because of the Cold War background, previous books, and also because I've always been fascinated by these left-wing terrorists of the 70s. And also because I wanted to give Milo, who works, his workaday world is a world of secrets. I wanted to give his personal life a whole layer of secrecy. It's just trying to keep the layers of secrecy, make the layers of secrecy personal. Because when I write about spies, I'm not just writing about spies. I'm writing about how people interact with each other and how we evade the truth with one another and sometimes outright lie on a regular basis, and how that affects our relationships. spying sort of becomes a metaphor for how we all get along or don't.
And this is really a story about families, too, and those kinds of relationships. Milo has a wife and a daughter, and there are some other central characters here who have significant others who are very important to them. And this becomes a big part of the spy craft, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And one reason I focus on this is because I think ideology can only take you so far in life. I think people who risk their lives for their country, I don't quite believe they're doing it for their country. I think they're doing it for personal reasons. They're missing something in their lives that they sort of replace, bring in ideology, sort of give them meaning because they're lacking it, or they're doing it for their family or for something they love. I think that's really the more common way of going about it. I've written one character from my earlier series who was more of an ideologue than any of the other spies. And as I wrote him over this series of books, I had to slowly kind of look more deeply at him and find out why he did the things he did. And again, it ended up coming down to personal relationships and history, childhood, and love affairs later on. And I sort of realized that, and I think this is true sort of any fiction, people are motivated by personal reasons always. And so to ignore family or, you know, personal security in a spy novel would sort of be dishonest, I think.
Well, in the previous book, we really got the sense that Milo was done with it, that Milo just wanted to be with his wife and daughter in New York City, that he had just absolutely had it with being a spy.
Yeah. And yet it keeps dragging him back in. I have to admit, this is one of the cliches of spy fiction, and sort of a lot of sort of thriller fiction. But it proves to be extremely useful in this, and hopefully it doesn't read like a cliche. I tried really hard to sort of help you understand why he's being dragged in again and again. And I think with this book, he's at least done with the agency he was working for.
The elephant in the room, I think, on this planet and in your book is China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when I was thinking about what sort of antagonist to have in these books, I had to sort of wrestle with this for a while because people around me were not talking about China as much. They were talking about terrorism. And to be honest, I threw around some ideas about using sort of terrorist antagonists, you know, Muslim extremists. But part of it was that I realized that I wasn't really equipped to write, you know, a Muslim extremist character and do it any justice. One of these days, I'll be able to, and I can write that character. But now, if I tried it, it would end up being a caricature, and I know that. So instead, I focused on something, in a way, a bit more serious, an entire nation that is economically, you know, rising and rising, that has its own challenges. And that also has its own intelligence services that I could parallel with CIA. In the first two books of this trilogy, you never really see the primary antagonist, Xin Xu. And in this last one, I wanted to finally really spend time with him and find out why he's done the things he's done so far. And to see the whole thing from his perspective. And one of the things readers of the trilogy will notice is that you really don't see Milo for I don't know if it's 100 pages, but it's quite a number of pages. You actually spend the bulk of that time with the antagonist. And I was very excited about that once I started writing his section and I found how smoothly it flowed. And I found myself really caring about this character, which I think is how I always want to write my spy novels, that you can empathize equally with the antagonist as well as the protagonist. And hopefully I succeeded with this.
Well, he certainly is a larger-than-life character. How were you able to write these scenes with all of these Chinese agents and Chinese behind-the-scenes power brokers conversing with one another? How did you imagine those scenes?
Well, it's, you know, as with everything, there's a lot of research involved. And honestly, it's largely about imagination. And my Chinese characters, they're not so different from my other characters. They have certain cultural things they may do differently. But like Milo or like any of the other characters, they're motivated by the same sort of personal desires and anxieties as anybody else. And in the end, I found that if I imaginatively tried to put myself in this country, in their positions, where like any sort of political figures, they're largely worried about maintaining their position, I was able to come up with characters and situations that to me felt very real. And that'll be up to readers to judge again.
Olin Steinhauer joins us. His book, An American Spy, the third book in this, can I call it the Tourist Trilogy?
No, yeah, you could do that.
It just came out today, and he joins us by telephone from a secure location somewhere on the West Coast. We had a guest on this program about a year ago who actually writes on the same imprint, Minotaur Books, and he calls himself James Church. Are you familiar with him?
Oh, yes. James Church, actually, I give a blurb to his first novel, Corpse in the Choreo, which is brilliant, North Korea.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Interesting guy.
Yeah. Now, he's someone who actually, you know, I come at it from the fiction writer who wanders into the espionage world. He comes at it from the espionage agent who's wandered into the fiction writing world. So he's done brilliantly with it. Not all ex-spies can actually pull off writing good fiction. He does.
Well, he's very mysterious, and I don't know if I'd call him an ex-spy, but I don't know. I just know.
I don't know specifics either.
when I tried to get an interview with him one time, they said, "Well, he can't do it. He's in Outer Mongolia."
Isn't that where we always are when we don't want to do an interview?
I think he probably really was. Yeah.
He might have been, yeah.
Yeah.
You really?
In your book, you have those little touches. One of my favorites was these spies have to have markers to identify each other. If they're going to meet someone secretly, it's going to be the guy with the sunglasses and the dark hat and the blue scarf or whatever. And at one point, you have someone looking for someone who's reading a book by Bukowski.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Well, it seemed like this is for them. They're meeting a Chinese character, I believe. And Bukowski just seemed, I would like to say there was some deeper meaning to it, but I liked it because it was completely unexpected of all things for him to be toting around, which of course makes it better because it's perhaps less likely.
It's a funny little touch. At one point, the statement is made, the things we do not deserve are taken from us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you believe that?
No. Not entirely. This is, I had to think a second, but that was more a statement of one character's fatalism and sense of guilt. If that were true, I think this would be a much more fair world. But I don't think it's true, sadly.
Well, I had wanted to interview you for the previous book, but I understood that you were living in Hungary and that was out of the realm of possibility. I was delighted when I heard that you were living back in the States because we could do this interview. And I kind of had a sense maybe you were back here because I've been seeing your name. Haven't you been writing some reviews and haven't you been out there quite a bit?
Well, yeah, actually, I started doing online social networking on Facebook and Twitter now, which this is something I was not doing before. But my publisher encouraged me, and it turns out to be a lot of fun interacting with people. It's funny when you live, because for 10 years, I've been in Hungary. And when a book comes out, it's just sort of distant news from another country that I have a book coming out. Mm. And it's interesting being here and sort of connecting to people, as I'm doing online now, just seeing people's enthusiasm. And it's immensely reassuring compared to, like I say, sitting in another country, just getting distant news that you're being read.
Well, I just recently started looking at Twitter a little bit, so I'll have to go on there and find you and send you a tweet later today.
There you go. We could tweet all day long.
you actually are into that?
Not really. Yeah. I have a website, theolensteinhauer.com, which is a Tumblr account. So I will do my basic news blog, and then that feeds directly to my Facebook and my Twitter. So I use Twitter as a relay station most, but I do converse a little bit on it.
I see. Olin Steinhauer joins us. His book is An American Spy. Well, what's next for you? It sounds like you're putting this series on the shelf.
Yes, for the moment, partly because I want to try something out. And by the time I finished American Spy, it involved lots of deep edits and rewriting, and I was sort of exhausted. So I started what I thought was going to be a very short novel. I wanted to do something quick. Now, over a year later, I'm still fighting with it, which is things never end up the way you plan. This one focuses on the Libyan civil war and set in Budapest and Cairo and a little bit in Libya. It's another spy story, mostly dealing with Americans.
So this is a standalone?
Yeah, it's a standalone for sure.
Mm-hmm. How did you get into writing espionage novels?
Well, started off, originally I was writing self-consciously literary works. I was inspired to become a writer in 89 by reading James Joyce, so my course was sort of set for the next 10 years. But to be honest, I was sort of failing at it. I was writing some nice stories that sort of wandered and meandered and didn't really have a solid plot backbone to really keep you interested. So I finally realized I was dealing too much with experimental fiction, and I started to wonder if I even knew how to write a straightforward story with a beginning, middle, and end. And so as an experiment, I've been reading some Raymond Chandler, and then I wrote my first book, The Bridge of Sighs, and the experiment turned out to be a great success. It got me published. And then I was writing these crime novels, and I stumbled across, as many espionage novelists do, John Le Carré. And I hadn't read him until The Spy Who Came In From the Cold, and then later Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. And I was sort of set. I realized, I mean, part of the argument was Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy is, to me, a great novel. And, you know, in the largest sense, it is up there with any literary fiction, as well as being completely compelling as a spy narrative. And when I saw that, I saw that at least I might be able to sort of achieve all my aims within the espionage genre. And that's sort of what I've been trying to do ever since then. It was sort of my third book that was 36 Yalta Boulevard. That was the one where I sort of switched over to espionage after writing a couple crime novels. And I like them, you know, I like all my books. But it was sort of with that step into espionage that I felt I could, you know, open my wings and really, really play around with form, voices, perspectives, some of the things that really got me aesthetically excited. And so far, it seems to be working out.
Well, Olin, we appreciate you visiting us on the program today and wish you a lot of luck with this new book, An American
Spy. It's
been
my pleasure. And thank you very much.
I know that some listeners are going to say, was he talking to Olin on a satellite phone from the mountains of Afghanistan? Olin was on a cell phone. And we didn't.
Well, I'm in California, so it might be a set. It might be a Kandahar on a set.
There you go. Well, you know, we didn't even talk about Milo's boss, but I got to say, I think he's a great character.
Oh, thanks.
And he's kind of like Milo. He drops out, too. In fact, there's a lot of people in this story. You said Milo dropped out for 100 pages. His boss drops out. Milo's family, his boss's wife, they're all gone. And you kind of let the Chinese carry the ball, don't you?
Exactly. I mean, this is one thing when you're dealing with multiple perspectives in a spy novel. Usually these people are not hanging out in the same room or even in the same country. So if you're going to switch over to someone else's perspective, you really have no choice but to drop everybody else for a while and sort of live in their little reality. And that's one of the things I like about it, being able to make people disappear for 100 pages and slip them back, which might infuriate some people, but I think it's quite fun.
Well, as a reader, I was delighted to disappear inside the pages of this book. Olin Steinhauer has been our guest. His book is An American Spy. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening. We've had some amazing memoirs on the program recently, and next week we're going to have another. It was written by Joe Blair. It's called By the Iowa Sea. Joe has written a lot of books, but this is the first time one has actually been published, and it is quite a story. Joe and his family survived the flooding in eastern Iowa that devastated the region 4 years ago, and he wrote a number of essays while that was going on, which he has now transformed into this compelling book. We'll be talking to Joe Blair about his memoir, By the Iowa Sea. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.